to function. Justice for the human family, we demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality is a must. Us. Decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pouring at system divination, how we build the justice. Welcome to Planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice. Build is to add on or do away with justice.
Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State's Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. I'm Tristan Josephson, Associate Professor of Women and Gender Studies at Sacramento State, and I'm here with Evan Minton, candidate for Assembly District 6. Today, we'll be talking about Evan's campaign, topics related to trans political representation, healthcare access, and anti-trans legislation, as well as how trans social justice visions can make connections across a range of progressive social and political issues. Thanks for joining me, Evan. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. I appreciate being here. I appreciate being in this space with you. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Okay, great. So let's just jump into the questions so we can hear more about these issues. So the first question I have for you is, why is it important that you're running as the first openly trans candidate for the California State Assembly? And then relatedly, what is the role of political representation in trans social justice movements?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I think that one of the things that is so important is that when we have a seat at the table, we are never going to be the priorities that we need to be. And we lose that representation. And right now, in our entire California state history, we've never had an openly transgender legislator. And in my experience, I've been able to get good policy passed for the trans community at the local, the state, and the national levels. But in the age of 2023, it's a banner year in not a positive way for attacks, political and legislative attacks on the trans community. You know, I can no longer abide by pulling on the shirt sleeves of my friends in office and asking them to do things for us. We simply have to be there ourselves. I've come to understand that in the worst of times when we're not at the table or on the menu, and in the best of times, we're afterthoughts, and we can't afford to be either one of those things. We truly need to be there with our own voices, with our own lived experiences, representing our own selves, our own lives, and our own communities. And everyone deserves to have a voice at the table. And everyone deserves representation. And the trans community is no different. So I'm really excited to, you know, be running a race, you know, where I'm one of the front runners in it. And I think that we can do this. But I'm also really excited to show others what's possible.
I'd love to hear also how you're kind of defining and imagining the trans community or trans communities and what that means, like your own positionality in those communities and who you're bringing together.
Everyone. I'm bringing everyone. For me, I my pronouns are he and they. But, you know, what I do, and, you know, I've done this work before, I don't look at who needs the least. I look at who needs the most. And I center those individuals and those communities in my work. And so when I talk about that, I talk about intersections. I talk about the intersection, and I mean the intersections when it comes to race and ethnicity in our trans community. Or when I talk about, you know, trans youth or trans seniors, I'm looking at, you know, our community as a whole, because we need better healthcare, we need, you know, better accommodations, we need protections Trans students are at the epicenter of this right now. But I'm also looking at particular portions of the trans community, and how I can best reach those portions of our trans community. And by way of doing that, it's addition, not subtraction. It's making sure that we have more and more voices at the table. And I'm thinking about like Shirley Chisholm. And it's like, if you don't have a space at the table, you bring your own folding chair. It's about making sure that there's enough folding chairs and enough, just enough comfortable chairs around the table. Make sure that everybody has a seat there and a voice there. And I'm a very big believer in those that are closest to the pain are closest to the solutions. We're experts on our own lives. And so ensuring that people who are the experts on their own lives have that seat at my table, that I'm expanding as we continue in this movement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that tracks a lot with, I teach, feminist social movements class, and we often talk in that class about, the folks who are experiencing the brunt of oppressive systems, right? Really understand how those systems work and how they need to change, right? And how they need to be transformed. And so that kind of lived expertise, right? And lived experiences and informs that.
You know, the majority of those who are being killed for their own identity are Black trans women. And so it's like, we can't have this kind of discussion without uplifting those who are being most marginalized and most targeted, and the resilience thereof. And so just honoring, amazing Black trans women who are doing the work, and also so highly impacted as well.
Yeah. And I think that that recognition allows us to recognize the way that like anti-Blackness and white supremacist ideologies are grounded in gender normativity, right? And the idea of a sex gender bias. And also, one of the other things I was thinking about while you were talking is the way that trans folks who have more privileges, how do we mobilize those privileges, right? Like you were saying, to bring in more people to the conversation, right? To force space and allow folks to have their voices heard, right? Okay, so the next question I have for you, Evan, is about healthcare access. And I was wondering if you could please talk about your own experiences accessing gender-affirming healthcare and how that has informed your work to expand healthcare access for trans people and others.
I was denied healthcare, my transition related care by my neighborhood hospital simply because of who I am, a trans person. It was time sensitive healthcare, and it wasn't something that I was going to particularly make public. It was a private healthcare decision between me and my doctor. And, but then when the hospital refused to serve me and they weren't responding to private pressure, we knew we had to go to the media, something I was really not planning on doing, of course. I mean, who thinks that they're going to go to the media to fight for their own healthcare? But after I was able to get my healthcare at a different hospital, the ACLU approached me and they asked me if I would be willing to make this a court case. And I didn't know what that meant. I had never been involved in the legal system before, but I felt a deep sense of responsibility to my community because of my status within it. And so I decided, I don't know what this is going to be like, a court case. I don't know if I'm strong enough, but I know that I'm strong enough to take the first step. And I know that I owe my community, that I feel a sense of responsibility to my community. And, fast forward, as you know, Tristan, the court case reached the United States Supreme Court. I was targeted by the Trump administration during it. It was a long, long, long struggle with a lot of sleepless nights and some tears thrown in, and a lot of surprises. But I mean, we created statewide precedents that it's illegal discrimination. It turns someone away from a hospital simply because they're transgender. And so these are the ways that I, you know, see using our power that we have to open up spaces to for our whole community to benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you talking about your own experiences and kind of how that's informed your work to expand healthcare access for trans. You know, when I started teaching almost 10 years ago, I wasn't coming out as trans to my students. I was happy to come out as queer, but the trans stuff felt more private and personal. And I think it took me some years, and then also took the sort of shifting climate right in the US for me to realize what a privilege I had, particularly as a masculine presenting, rather gender normative white trans person, right? To not be visibly trans, right? And really realized, yeah, that I was sort of enjoying that privilege and that safety that I felt, right? Because I hadn't felt that in previous points of my life, but that's actually highly problematic for a variety of reasons, right? And like that I actually have very little to risk, right? I had a job, I was protected by my racial and class status in a lot of ways, and that actually it's really would be important to let queer and trans students at Sac State know, like, hey, there are trans faculty who work here, there's trans staff people who work here, and what does that mean, right? So I appreciate that. I think you sharing that and that sort of toggling between like what should be and is like very private decisions that folks make around their gender and their health, right? But that oftentimes that becomes really public and visible, and how do folks navigate that? And for whom do people, like which groups of folks have the ability to, or some choices around that, right? And other folks don't, because they're always going to be hyper-visible as trans, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of leads to the sort of follow-up question I have, which is, when I'm talking in my classes about trans issues, I'm often saying, you know, trans issues often get kind of exceptionalized as like, oh, this is an issue that applies only to a small group of people, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and one of the arguments I always make to my students is similar to your points earlier, that if we look at what a really minoritized group of people are experiencing in a healthcare industry, for example, like that helps us understand how the system is not working for many, many people, right? And so, the kind of question I wanted to ask is, you know, how do you understand then sort of healthcare access as being like the need to expand it to meet the needs of trans folks in particular, but also how is that not just a quote unquote trans issue?
Yeah, no, I was able to testify as an expert witness in front of the United States House Oversight Committee on this. And it's something that, you know, I've just gained more and more knowledge in after my own brutal, like incredibly brutal experiences within our healthcare system. I've been leading on it ever since. It's uncomfortable to like talk about oneself like that, but I mean, really, I have. More people need to be aware of the statistic that 1 in 6 hospital beds in our state, on average, that's 1 in 6, restrict care to like based on reproductive health care. So that's anything like the morning after pill to a survivor of sexual assault, to abortion, to IVF treatment, anything like that, and transition related care. So, I mean, that is a startling statistic, and it's due to the conservative takeover of our hospitals and also the private equity, when private equity firms take up our hospitals as well, it's due to the consolidations, the mergers, and the acquisitions. And part of that is due to a philosophical belief system in which folks are saying, you know, our folks don't agree with us getting the care that we need based on bodily autonomy, no matter who you are, no matter, you know. And then part of it is due to, you know, this is not profitable. And so we're gonna quit, you know, having a maternity ward here. The maternity wards are just being closed. in this last decade enormously. But yeah, no, so it's just like the trans community has so many intersections. That's just one example in healthcare in which we need to fight back, and we can do that. We can do that through giving the attorney general more power of oversight over, you know, the mergers, acquisitions, and consolidations of hospitals, and making sure that that kind of care remains in the community. That right now the attorney general has oversight over certain hospitals being able to do that, but not others. We need to give the attorney general more oversight over all of that. But, you know, in terms of the trans community, like so many of my trans friends have an enormous interest in environmental justice, as do I. And it's because the trans community disproportionately lives in poverty. And if you look at the Cal Enviro screening map, where, you know, the highest pollution sparks are in California, and you take a map of where the low income areas are in California, you don't need two maps. You just need one, because polluted areas are mostly in, you know, predominantly enormous, like gigantically in low income communities and communities of color. And so, you know, if you look at our criminal justice system, if you look at any system, you'll see that LGBTQ plus people are overrepresented in these different systems in which folks, you know, we have folks on the ground trying to reform. And so, yeah, trans issues, LGBTQ plus issues, they spread out into all areas of life because we are multifaceted human beings. I mean, the price of gas affects us. Like our rent going up affects us. Affordable housing, we're not single issue people. And so it's just like everything that affects anyone else also affects us. And then we have this area of our lives in which we are also very uniquely attacked for being who we are, and suffer real consequences, unfortunately.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, on that note, what, you know, we are witnessing over the last few years, I mean, it's kind of hard to date because there's always sort of anti-trans sentiment historically, right, in the United States and in U.S. politics. But I think definitely kind of one of the upticks was under the Trump administration. And then I think, you know, it's particularly in the last few years, really intensification of proposed and successful anti-trans legislation at various state levels. I'm interested in how you're making sense of this backlash, which may be kind of historically consistent or an intensification, right? But we're definitely facing a different kind of moment and a different kind of rhetoric under which trans people and particularly trans youth, I think, are getting really targeted in ways that feel, to me, I'm not that old, but to me, more intense, right, than previous generations. So what's your thinking about like what's happening and how can we respond to that? How should we be responding to that?
Well, you know, it's scary and it's dangerous, and it's not just theoretical. And I'm, you know, I hear folks sometimes talking about it like it's just theoretical, and it's just the natural order of things to make progress and then to go back and make progress and go back. But it's just like, I mean, I work with LGBTQ plus youth and particularly trans youth here in our Sacramento region on the ground. And ever since this uptick, particularly in 2023, they've been feeling it in their schools, you know, they've been feeling it from their peers. And then I have two nieces who are in our public schools here locally, and there's been more and more conversation about and debate about trans people, like going on in the classroom around them. And my nieces hate it because, you know, they love me, their Uncle Evan. And so, you know, whether these bills are passing or not, you know, the fights come to California. And I'm so glad that our youth have the words to express who they are. And it makes me so happy to have so many of our youth, our young people, so dedicated to advancing justice and good causes, you know, and inclusivity and fairness. But at the same time, you know, these bills, these legislative attacks, this weaponizing of legislation, these political attacks, you know, what it's looking like in the real world is it's death, it's violence, it's open discussions of questioning our morality and existence. And I get so concerned because it's just like, you know, how isolating must that feel if you're that trans kid in that classroom overhearing those discussions, you know, about your own self? These are some of the discussions that we were able to put to bed. We were able to put them to bed. And so I see that, you know, the Republicans have found an issue that, you know, they feel that they can win elections on. And so they kick the dust up on it, you know, and they don't care who they're hurting in the process. So for me, it's them maliciously, strategically trying to win elections. But in the process, we're seeing this play out in a lot of different ways that are hurting people. But I also want to say, on the other hand, I could not be like more, I could not applaud our young people any more than I am, you know, because I do think that it's a vocal minority who are, you know, not the inclusive type.
I'm an educator. So one of my responses to that is education, right? Conversation, like discussion, sort of folks learning about histories, learning how to unpack arguments, right, is one way to respond to this backlash. And but I'm wondering kind of what your thoughts, I imagine some of it might be through electoral politics as well, right? But how what are ways to that youths think are effective in responding or shifting the conversation, or yeah, how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, in my mind, we, you know, need to stop you know, the forced outing of trans kids by school districts. Like, that is something that is incredibly dangerous for trans kids that live in abusive households. One of my best friends is a trans woman who had to run away from her household at the age of 12 when her parents discovered that she was trans. And she lived on the streets of LA for a number of years. She lived in Florida. She took a bus to LA, I mean, at the age of 12. So, you know, we've got to, you know, say as a state what our values are and then follow those values, which are inclusivity and fairness, and then follow that with our policies and our budget. And I mean, that includes, you know, educating the educators around, you know, safer schools and classroom discussions. And I've been proud to pass resolutions here with teeth at the local level in a few different school boards this last year around Trans Day visibility. When I knew all this was hitting the fan, I decided that I needed, you know, to start combating this in a big way. And so we were able to pass a resolution committing schools to use the correct pronouns and the correct names and, you know, and honoring and celebrating, you know, Trans Day Visibility, Trans Day Remember, and encouraging classroom discussion at age appropriate levels. I see policy as the way. It's my magic wand to improve people's lives. And so, you know, I've always said policy is my way of making permanent widespread positive change. And so that's what I do. You create safer spaces through the use of policy. You create education through the use of policy. And at the same time, in our daily lives, continuing to have those sometimes tough conversations about who we are, you know, and breaking through the barriers to get us, you know, to be able to see eye to eye with folks and have folks see eye to eye with us.
Okay. Thank you, Evan. Those were my questions. Do you have anything else that came up for you that you'd like to add to the conversation?
No, I don't think so. I think that your questions were pretty thorough. And yeah, I want to thank you so much for just this conversation and having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, it was wonderful to talk with you, Evan. Thank you. And thank everyone for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understandings, empathies, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all. You just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast, including its title and description, represent the views and opinions of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Sacramento State, Chris J., and or the Building Justice Podcast Committee.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice.